This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, I'm Hanif Baharuddin, and you're tuned into the show that brings you closer to the people and places of our capital city. Facing this COVID-19 crisis is not easy for everyone, but for the marginalized groups, the challenges are much, much harder. Having said that, one heartening thing that has become apparent throughout this crisis is how Malaysians are thoughtful and are willing to lend their help in whatever form needed to help the less privileged. But what is it like to help organize relief efforts during the MCO period? To find that out, we speak to Nadine Azalea Faisal, a volunteer with Tenaga Nita that has been around coordinating and mobilizing help for the underprivileged since the beginning of MCO. Firstly, I'm curious to know how she has been coping with everything.
For me, I think the MCO made me a lot busier. Well, actually, it occurred in stages. I think there have been several stages to my own state during this MCO. But in terms of work, first and foremost, as an editor, I work with manuscripts and stuff, and we don't work off of physical manuscripts most of the time. It's in digital files, so it's pretty easy to transition into bringing that stuff back home because they were already in the cloud. So I'm fortunate to have had the opportunity for my full-time job to continue during the MCO. But at the same time, of course, this movement control order represented a huge challenge for people who couldn't move their work to the cloud. And a lot of marginalized communities were disproportionately affected. So that at the beginning was a big fear and concern of mine. So I shifted also, not shifted, in addition to my work from home for Gerak Budaya, I also kind of amped up my involvement in fundraising for getting food supplies to fulfill the needs that became completely unprecedented, the amount of demand during this MCO period. And that was actually very, very stressful because, I mean, as I mentioned, the demand was unprecedented and we were operating with so many uncertainties, and the policies that the government put out for how NGOs could work or how like humanitarian aid could be distributed changed by the day. So problems came up, delays occurred. So I would say within that first week, very much my focus was on that kind of thing. And then we put out a fundraiser. I was very concerned about this stuff, and I reached out to some people who I thought would be able to kind of rally together some sort of fund. And I saw that so many people were doing this, which is amazing. So there was also that process of kind of learning not to duplicate work, trying to see how you can add value, because there is, of course, a huge need. And no matter how many people are involved, there's still people who need help. So, getting in touch with people and eventually organically forming this team between Tenaga Nita, Refuge for the Refugees, Liga Rakyat Demokratik, and also Dapur Jalanan KL to run a fundraiser for getting grocery packs to refugee families and also migrant workers, but also any person who kind of identified and demonstrated their need and who weren't getting urgent help that they needed in time, perhaps because of time lag of government aid or uneven access to aid for local citizens. So even if they're not refugees or migrants, we have also helped those cases. And in the first week of the MCO, that was very overwhelming. And also after putting out information about the fundraiser, it actually blew up, sort of, which is incredibly good. People like Dr. Wan Aziza shared our fundraiser, and my phone number, which was on the poster, became a hotline, not only for people getting in touch about donating, but also refugees and migrants, people within the communities who need aid. They would also call me. And on Thursday, I looked at my phone stats, my screen time. I actually spent 11 hours on my phone that entire day, which is a lot. Just answering WhatsApp messages from people in the communities and also phone calls. So it's actually very emotionally overwhelming. Yeah, that was my first week of MCO. And aside from that, I also have work. So it was like learning how to juggle everything.
Raising funds is one of the biggest hurdles that needs to be overcome when they embark on a project like this. But according to Nadine, the responses were overwhelmingly positive.
So on the one hand, it's very encouraging that amazingly, this fundraiser for refugees and migrants gained so much traction. We reached our fundraising goal in 12 hours. The initial fundraising goal was 30,000 ringgit to serve 500 families with grocery packs of about 60 ringgit in value each. We reached that in a matter of hours, and then we continued to get more than that and more than that. So actually, that has enabled this relief effort to be continuing until today. Like, as we speak, packs are being distributed to people in refugee and migrant communities and also B40 communities. Yeah, so now we have reached some stability, but in the beginning, when all of this was fresh, even though the people on my team had years and years of experience, which I am so grateful for, because I really, me myself, I'm just like a kakise boat. Like, I'm not formally part of Tinaganita or anything. I used to intern there, but now I'm just a volunteer. But so glad to have had Heidi and Hasna and Matt Koy and Amir and Pak Wan from Liga Raya and Dapur Jalanan to run this operation and also tap into their networks. And now we've kind of stabilized our operations, and it's actually turned into one of the biggest relief operations that there is, according to a UNHCR report that was released in the past few weeks. Looking at the numbers, because while initially we aimed to have about 500 families delivered food packs, actually now we're reaching 3,000, which is incredible and so indicative of like the generous spirit of a lot of Malaysians.
Nadine's personal phone number was on the poster that was circulated, and as someone who wasn't as experienced in being at the forefront of a crisis like this, she was eventually overwhelmed by the whole situation.
Yeah, so in the first stage of MCO, I was very overwhelmed emotionally with all of that, because people in need were reaching out to me, and I myself have never had experience managing a hotline, which essentially is what my phone turned into. My personal contact number turned into a hotline with urgent requests for food and stuff, and it was very stressful, because I also felt the burden of responding to everyone as fast as I can, and at the same time I couldn't keep up with the amount of phone calls that were coming in. So actually, this is still the state for people who are whose numbers are on the posters and who are collecting beneficiary data. I, though, had to, after the first phase of distribution, I had to face the facts, and I had to step down from being within the main coordinating team, because I simply could not go what had become a huge commitment in responding to people who were calling and also sourcing supplies, which is incredible work, but I couldn't juggle it with my job, which was being sidelined due to the urgent things that were coming my way. Yeah, so I stepped down. Somebody else took my place, Ellis from Tinaganita. She is incredible and has brought so much value to the team. And they've continued. We started in March 20th. That's when the WhatsApp group was started. And it's continuing to this day. Yeah, so we've surpassed like 600% of our initial goal, which is amazing. Yeah.
That was Nadine Azalia Faisal, a volunteer with Tinaganita, sharing her experience mobilizing help for the refugees and migrant communities during this MCO period. We're going for a short break. Stay tuned. I'm Hanif Baharuddin, and you're listening to I Love KL on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. I'm Hanif Baharudin, and joining me this week is Nadine Azalia Faisal, a volunteer with Tenaga Nita. Nadine is part of the group that has been mobilizing help to the refugees and migrant communities in KL, and she joins us this week to share her experiences so far. Providing aid comes in different shapes and forms, and for Tenaga Nita, they've decided that the best way to go about it is to give help in the form of grocery bags. How did they come to this decision? Nadine walks us through the process of designing the form of the aid, all the way to mobilizing them with all the challenges of operating during the MCO in mind.
Well, first in designing the form of aid, Hasna from Tenaga Nita, Hasna Hussein, was involved from the very beginning, and she herself is a refugee with years. I mean, she is from the community, so she has direct experiences of the needs of the community. So she was able to tell us what the most urgent needs were and how best to use funds that we got, and that was with dry goods, food that would last. I mean, initially, the MCO was only 2 weeks, right? So we designed the grocery pack to last for 2 weeks with rice, onions, potatoes, let's see what else, oil, things like that, sardines. So we designed an aid pack that would be sustainable rather than cooked food, which was also happening in the early days of MCO. I think now most relief efforts have moved into giving grocery packs. But in the beginning, there was, still going on for frontliners and stuff, and also on a smaller scale for anyone in marginalized communities, cooked foods. People would deliver frozen goods. But from Hasna, we got insight that, you know, not everybody in refugee communities has cold storage at home. They don't have freezers or fridge, so frozen items wouldn't be the best. And so it's with her input that we kind of were able to design what goes into the package. And then, so the way it worked was, first we identified the cost of one grocery pack, and then we decided, okay, we're going to aim for 500 packs. And for to us, that was already like, wow, that's something achievable. But that's also like, that's our goal initially. And then so we set out to raise the funds first. And it was only after we had reached our fundraising goal, and in fact continued to surpass our fundraising goal, that we started sourcing for suppliers. So yeah, after getting the money, we need to figure out where to buy these things, right, in bulk, because we're preparing many, many grocery packs at once rather than doing a little bit by little bit. So fortunately, I want to give a shout out to the people at the Kuala Lumpur and Selangor Chinese Assembly Hall. They actually generously provided that hall, which has the capacity to hold thousands of people inside, as the place for our packing operations. So it's planning, packing, and distributing, or rather purchasing, packing, and distributing. Those would be the three phases. Also, aside from beneficiary management, aka getting their data, sifting through their data, making sure there aren't duplicates, things like that. Yeah, so the sourcing part of it was also rather challenging, because we had a huge order that we wanted to place, and finding places that could also transport it to our location was also a challenge. We eventually did find suppliers, though, and then we got all of those supplies sent to KL and Selangor Chinese Assembly Hall. And then, so the people on our team have access to volunteers who are amazing, and they come to KL Shah, which is what I have been referring to the Assembly Hall as, because that's the acronym. Who come to the Chinese Assembly Hall and also help pack. So then, in terms of packing, how do we deal with that in the time of COVID, right, where people are at risk of infection? We took the steps to buy an infrared thermometer. So anybody who was volunteering with us had to be checked what the temperature was. We also had a supply of masks for volunteers, and also bottles and bottles of hand sanitizer. So we try our best to adhere to the social distancing requirements of COVID-19. And fortunately, because KL Shah, or the Chinese Assembly Hall, is so large, actually it's really easy for us to maintain like a meter of distance within each other throughout all of the packing operations, packing processes. Yeah. And then after packing, After packing comes distribution. So for distribution, there are various factors involved. One, who are our PICs, our person in charge for the communities we're delivering to? What location specifically are we delivering to? Who will be doing the distribution? Because by this point, when we had prepared, we had like kind of almost reached distribution point of our operation, that's when the government decided, okay, NGOs cannot operate on their own. They have to operate through RILA or JKM. And so although that was announced, there was very little directive given to organizations how to actually adhere to these rules. So it was a whole process of figuring out how to go about it. Fortunately, we were able to secure a PBSM, Persatuan Bulan Sabit Merah, or the Red Crescent Society, as a partner. And they are affiliated with the health ministry and also enforce strict social distancing rules, or all the rules that are connected with preventing infection of COVID-19. And they were hugely involved in our distribution. They even provided transport. So another factor aside from approval of distribution would be the transportation of aid. And because we're dealing with bulk amounts, it means lorries, and like really huge lorries, because honestly, one pack weighs 15 kg, because even the rice alone is 10 kg. So with Impact Malaysia, for when we were transporting our bulk orders, we were able to secure lorries through their Tolong Hanta initiative, #TolongHanta. So people in Impact were really helpful for us. Shout out to Rizal from Impact Malaysia. But also PBSM, they provided pickup trucks with the official PBSM pickup trucks with the logos on it. So it was a very legit operation with health-related officers on the ground during distribution. Yeah, so we would load all of the packs. If you see our social media, you can see the bags and bags and bags in rows and rows and rows in KL Shah, all being loaded onto lorries to be brought to the center point for drop-off. And at the drop-off location, there was also an SOP that we developed. We worked with the local representatives who were from the refugee communities that we were helping to make sure that people don't crowd around and take the aid. Rather, the aid is distributed to them within that local community one by one, or maybe they come to that drop-off location in a staggered fashion so that the risk of infection of COVID is lowered as much as possible. Yeah, so figuring all of that out from zero was definitely a challenge, but it was a challenge that the dream team honestly carried out so graciously and incredibly. But definitely lessons from our first phase were learned and implemented into the second phase, and now we're at the third phase and we have a much more stable operation and things are much more certain. I mean, in the beginning, even the way the government was managing this virus was uncertain, but now we're several weeks in, we're past a month into the MCO, we've kind of gotten footing. But yeah, that's how the logistics looks like.
So what were some of the lessons that Nadine has learned from her experience so far?
Yeah, actually, coming out of that first week, I felt like a soldier that had returned from war, because I think it kind of hardened me a bit. As I mentioned, I had a lot of calls coming in, and all of them were urgent in nature. I mean, it sounded that way, asking for aid. And you know that these are people who, I mean, if they don't need help, in the beginning, you kind of don't super think about fraud and stuff like that, but you kind of want to help people. So something I have learned is actually the ability to distance myself from that and also pause and take time, the time necessary to verify cases, the way to respond and manage calls. So write things down immediately. And also it came about this kind of more emotionally stable way of dealing with it came about through the improvement of our systems, right? So we had, so eventually we were able to come up with a comprehensive list of all the information we needed for any case that came up to us. But also we had to reach difficult decisions too. Actually, it's hard to cater to direct requests outside of our community networks, because how do we verify? We have the responsibility to make sure that the funds that we receive are actually used for people who are in need of them. So how do we verify authenticity of requests? It's very hard if it's just over the phone, because anybody could say anything. So it was developing systems around that, and also developing it's a little bit of a loss, I think, also, but it kind of makes sense now. I see this attitude in people who work in CSOs and NGOs, like they are able to be much more distanced from the pleas that they receive. So that was a lesson for me, because I was just a volunteer, right, whose number became a hotline. And that was a huge lesson for me. And I think moving forward, I think it has changed me, actually. We do what we can. It was also coming to terms with our own capacity. And for me, learning perspective, because, I mean, it's a structural issue. As a organization, as a relief effort, we cannot possibly cater to every case of need, because, as I said, the numbers are huge. If even 2% of refugees and migrants were in difficult situations, the beneficiaries would be number in their tens of thousands. So it's a structural issue that we need to address as a nation, really. And so gaining that perspective happened over a period of time, and that is one other lesson that I got.
You've been tuning in to I Love KL, and this week we spoke to Nadine Azalia Faisal, a volunteer with Tenaganita, about her experience helping the refugee and migrant communities during the MCO. That's all we have for this episode of I Love KL. If you miss any part of the show, you can check out the podcast at bfm.my/ilovekl, our app which you can find via Google Play and the App Store, and also Spotify. Don't forget to also follow the station on Twitter at BFM Radio. My name is Hanif Baharuddin, and you have been tuning in to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. Join us again next week only on BFM 89.9, the business station. Remember to stay at home, practice social distancing, and stay safe. Salam Ramadan to those out there who are observing.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.